Welcome, everybody, to the Chinchilla Picking Podcast. It is February the 10th, 2024, 12:31 p.m. My name is David Underwood, and I'm joined by the one and only Baron of Bonds, Brandon Beaver. As always, we hope to be entertaining, educational, and uplifting because we want everyone to make money. Brandon, what do you got for us, man? How was your day? How's your weekend?
You know what? It's been an okay weekend. Actually, give me one second because
I think this is probably a problem. I don't have my microphone next to me.
Now you sound better. Now you're like echo. It's like echo. Now it's like clear.
So. All right. So audio should be cleared up now. So that's a good thing because we have a podcast to do where I have to talk.
It usually helps.
It's been great. I mean, I don't know. Super Bowl weekend tomorrow. Who's going to win? I hope it's not those dreadful San Francisco 49ers.
You know, all right, so I got a joke coming about the Super Bowl weekend, but first I want to say this is why we're doing this podcast on Saturday, is Brandon and I both have, like, engagements and things going on tomorrow, so that's why we're recording on a Saturday instead of a Sunday, but you'll still have it Monday morning if you're listening like usual. Still be there Monday morning, but there was this girl who did a satire piece on TikTok, and she was like, you know, I've asked all these guys out to go out and hang out with me on Sunday evening, and everybody's busy, and nobody's available to hang out. Right. And just satire. It's meant to be funny. But you see in all the comments was you should ask a Cowboys fan. They're always free this time of year.
That's funny. You know what? So many other sports teams are free this time of year. There's tons of sports teams in the NFL that have never won a Super Bowl. And by the way, if you're a fan of one of those teams that's never won a Super Bowl, maybe be quiet about the Cowboys, because I've seen my team win three, and you've seen them win none. So, yeah.
So, Brandon, it's not that. It's the fact that you Cowboy fans are so loud is what makes
it. We're not that loud.
But you are.
We are not louder than the Steelers fans. The Eagles fans are much more obnoxious than us.
Yeah, the Eagles fans are the worst. Yes. They're the worst. Yes. It's one more game, and then football's over with. Until August, so one more game. Then we can talk about other things going on in the world. But yeah, Super Bowl affects a lot of businesses, advertisements, a lot of, you know, hey, is this going to be an ad we're going to see? Is this what's going to happen? How much money are they going to pull in? I used to do at a Kahoot game for people of how many wings does get eaten every year on the Super Bowl? How many, you know, pizzas get ordered? Yada yada yada. It's a lot. There's a lot of money involved with the Super Bowl weekend every year. And then there's this big push that, like, businesses should all open later on Monday, the day after the Super Bowl. Find that funny. Anyways, people are here to listen to us about stocks and investments. It was a big week. There was a change in CPI numbers, a readjustment, if you will, and inflation is still trending down. So that was the news there. It is still in the right path for the Fed. Looks like a soft landing is in place. I know I didn't think that they're ever going to do it without causing some havoc at first, but then I switched gears once I saw the evidence over time. Looks like a soft landing is going to happen, and inflation is going to hit that 2%, and we're not going to go into deflation.
I don't know about that.
Okay. All right. Well,
the earnings, and here's a.
Well, before we get there, let me do the rules.
About to get into, but here's the thing: Pepsi earnings might be disagreeing with you.
Oh, really? Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. Rules. Brandon and I get together 5 to 10 minutes before the show, and we tell each other what they're going to talk about. You hear the live back and forth, the bicker and the banter, right here live for you. That's our entertainment part. As we do it, we hope to educate by explaining definitions and how things work and why we come to the conclusion we did about certain companies. Brandon, take it away, since I know you want to talk about Pepsi, man.
And Disney. I'm going to do Disney first because I got
I took your advice on the show and bought Disney, and then I sold it before now, and I sold it for a profit. I made money off of it, so thank you. So, but I do want to hear what you have to say about Disney, though.
What'd you do, about 15% on it? Because that was a pretty good earnings, a nice jump in the share price there because of it.
No, I did 10% return, but I didn't hold it as long. I sold it back in, like, December, man. And it was a nice return for me in a very quick period, so thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. No problem. Walt Disney shares climbing more than 11% Thursday after a earnings report that had a lot of announcements here. Bob Iger announcing that they are taking their a big step into gaming, a $1.5 billion stake in Epic Games. This is going to be a deal where Disney is going to create a Fortnite-style universe. I think what he was talking about, this might actually be, it's either going to be in Fortnite or it'll be a Fortnite-adjacent thing. Sort of a Disney universe, Fortnite-style, where you can play games and shop even. So kind of a like a, almost a metaverse thing going on there. They did make significant progress in reducing costs and capital spending, $886 million in free cash flow for the quarter, $5 billion for the entire year. Parks and cruise lines realized a 7% year-over-year revenue growth, 87% revenue growth for the streaming side of things. Still losing money there, but a large narrowing of the losses for streaming. Orlando's Disney World showed lower volume but higher guest spend. I think that's because the ticket prices have infamously kind of ballooned over the past couple of years. They're targeting to invest $60 billion in the next 10 years in experience, which is parks and cruise lines. And they said especially in the parks and new cruise ships, there's going to be an emphasis on experience that underscores the unit's durability. In 2024, if we're looking for a turnaround in the movie industry, I don't know if we're going to get that or not. But there's a lot of positives coming for Disney here. Agatha from Marvel Studios. Skeleton Crew is another movie that's coming out. The Acolyte from Lucasfilm. I'm assuming that's going to be a Star Wars thing. Win or Lose from Pixar. And a lot more coming up for the movies. There's going to be, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, Inside Out 2, Deadpool 3, Alien, Romulus and Mufasa from The Lion King, and the biggest one here for all you Swifties, Blockbuster, Taylor Swift concert film, The Eras Tour on Disney Plus, March 15th. I think that's probably what sent the share price flying, is as soon as they just Taylor Swift on the conference call there.
So, I mean, that's going to be a big component for them. I think some of those movies that you mentioned, some of them I don't think are going to do well because they haven't done well for Disney in the past. It's been very hit or miss for movies.
Moana 2. I didn't mention Moana 2, I don't think. I think that's going to be a big one.
I honestly believe it's all about how Disney does them and promotes them. They've been I'm trying to walk a line here, but when they've been very political one side or the other, they haven't done well at all.
I disagree with that, actually. I don't think the politics of it actually made any difference. I think what made a difference in the share price was a $73 billion expenditure.
I was talking about movies. I was talking about the Disney movies this past year.
Yeah, but still, everybody made the same accusations against Nike while they were hitting all-time highs. And they were as political.
Nike never lost sales. Not Nike continued. Yeah, I agree with you. Nike continued sales. But Disney's movie performance at the theaters has done horrible, except for a couple movies.
Yeah, but I don't think that's a politics thing. I think that's a COVID thing. And I think that's a shutdown of the movie theaters. There's not as many movie theaters to launch in. I think it's a streaming thing. I think it has nothing to do with politics, to be honest with you.
Okay, fair enough. That's a good evaluation. You know, I was looking for a way out of that assessment. But coming into this year, I mean, we'll see. A lot of people are worn out on the whole Marvel things because they went too many different directions. A lot of people are worn out on trying to squeeze every last dollar out of the Star Wars franchise with some certain aspects of it. You know, they're actually looking for, people want the big budget movies for the Star Wars and not a lot of these spinoffs. I mean, The Mandalorian did well, but Andor did not do well. A few of the other ones did not do well for Star Wars. It's been hit or miss, and people are getting tired of, like, why are you just throwing out the same stuff from Disney? The parks, yeah, they raised the prices, so they kept the profitable and kept it moving, and it's been a big component for the rebound. But the last year's, like, whole movies and streaming, Bob Iger wasn't behind the direction of that. So this year would be more of what Bob Iger is. Maybe half the year, the back half of the year, more of what Bob Iger was pushing. So they still have to go through all these deals they made to make these movies and streaming services and things before Bob Iger took over versus what happened after he took over. So
yeah, and by the way, I'm as worn out of woke as anybody, but I just don't see the numbers as far as go woke or go broke. I don't think that's been true, but just my opinion and my analysis alone. There's a lot still to go as far as Disney goes and their turnaround, but they're making significant progress here. Two thumbs up on the earnings report here. There's some disappointing news, I think, for Disney earnings here. I'll get to that in a second, though. Go ahead.
I want to interrupt you real quick. There is one great thing for Disney that I am actually looking forward to. I have a Disney Plus subscription. Because I got it with my Hulu Live bundle, ESPN Plus, and all this stuff, other things worked in there. But one thing I am looking forward to from Disney Plus, and this is because it's not original, but the original was back way like 50 years ago, that it's now seems original to a lot of people. And it's the Shogun miniseries. I am looking forward to that. Yes.
FX. Going to be Hulu specific, I believe.
No, Disney Plus, man.
Is it? I thought it was going to be on
Hulu. Hulu's going to have it as well, because Disney Plus and Hulu are basically going to be the same company here very shortly, but Hulu is going to have it as well. But yeah, Shogun the miniseries is the new one that comes out at the end of this month. Looking forward to that. That's going to be interesting. They have to have a good first show for it to really take off.
Well, there's a lot of anticipation behind it. I think there's a lot of good upcoming things for Disney here. Earnings per share for the first quarter, they came in at $1.22 adjusted versus a forecast of 99 cents. Revenue did miss estimates, though. That was roughly flat year over year. Company also announced a dividend of 45 cents a share, which is something that they have not done in a long time. Actually, they re-announced a dividend last year. They hadn't had a dividend for a while. They had suspended it, and then they brought it back, and now this dividend is going to be 50% higher than what it was before. So the company also updated us on its plans to cut costs by at least $7.5 billion, at least $7.5 billion, by the end of the year. They forecasted an earnings per share around $4.60, which I think is about 25% higher. Go ahead, Dave.
This is a trend I'm seeing, is companies going ahead and cutting labor costs or stalling projects, but then they're going to go ahead and raise their dividend by 50 cents a share or 15 cents or 10 cents. And I'm like, well, you could have used that 10 cents a share and kept that project going. Or you could have used that 15 cents a share and kept maybe a portion of this labor in order to push some initiatives faster. You know what I mean? To me, it's a lack of innovation with the companies in how they're using their funds. Maybe I'm getting older and I'm agreeing with Warren Buffett more, but like, if a company is doing a dividend rather than reinvesting that money, I would rather see you reinvest that money smartly.
Yeah, me too. They did announce a $3 billion buyback, so that's kind of a reinvestment.
That's a reinvestment, yes. The buyback's better than a dividend.
Yeah. So the improvements in the streaming business was pretty profound. I said 87% increase in revenue there. What I'm concerned about here, so they announced on Tuesday they're going to launch a new streaming venture with ESPN, Fox, and Warner Brothers Discovery. That's going to be TNT NBA, basically NBA on TNT, which is their most popular program. I was kind of hoping for at least an equity sale of ESPN, selling half of it to somebody else, or you know, so that the investors can make some capital back on this. I saw this and I thought, man, you know what? At least they have some partners in it. It's going to be a big streaming service. But then I read the rumor that the cost of this for consumer, if you were to get the streaming service, the rumor is that they're going to charge $45 to $50 per month.
Wow. Well, so here's my see, I saw this deal too, and I didn't really dig into the details. I don't like that they're creating a cartel of sports channels and networks, so that the only way you can see live sports is through these avenues here. I don't like that. I call it a cartel because that's what it is. And $45 a month. What if we already have, like, if you have HBO Max or Max now, as that's what it's called, that's the Time Warner part. They already show live NBA games on Max and NHL hockey on there as well. You already have that, and you already have ESPN Plus. Do you have to purchase a stream? And that would be a question, because I already have both.
Yeah, I don't
I
know.
don't want to have to go ahead and purchase a second one now.
Right. The $45 to $50 a month, they said the introductory pricing may be lower to entice signups. And man, I hope it is, because at $45 to $50 a month, this thing falls on its face.
Yeah, you're not going to get people spending that, like, not a lot of people. True fans, if that's the only way they can see their team, might well, but they'll do it for 2 3 months and then they'll quit it for the whatever season they want to watch it for.
Yeah. Another negative here to me, Disney's pre-tax margin, 5.4%. The average over the past 5 years has been 25% prior to the pandemic. Let me announce that. So prior to the pandemic, the average pre-tax margin was 25%, and now down to 5.4%. We need to see an increase on that. In my opinion, if you're Nelson Peltz, that's what you zero in on if you're going to continue to be an activist investor in Disney. And by the way, Nelson Peltz, it does seem like he's not going to let up. Despite the fact that this earnings report was pretty good, he came out with a he released a comment through his investors group and said that we've seen this movie before last year. I disagree. I think we've seen significant progress here, but he seems to want to press on.
Well, I mean, I agree with him, man. Why would you take your foot off the gas pedal? Why would you stop pressuring Disney to continue to be more profitable if you still have the leverage? I mean, keep doing it. I would.
I mean, yeah, but I think he wants to get board membership. That's I think he's it's a more
Wouldn't you, if you're running that, if you're an activist investor, that is always the goal, to get some board membership so that you can make real changes and then sell off your piece for a lot of profit later on. That's always the goal. That's the game plan. It's the same game plan always. Carl Icahn did it time and time and time again. I mean, there's all kinds of people who still do it, activist investors. This is nothing new. It's not nothing new underneath the sun. It's the same game plan. Yeah, I mean, I would do it if I was in his shoes.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. I guess you're right here. Operating losses of $138 million for Disney's direct-to-consumer segment, but that was only about a third of what analysts had expected. And this is improvement, by the way, a large improvement from the nearly $1 billion in losses from the same period 1 year ago. So we're looking at profitability, I think, at least by the end of this year, maybe even by the second quarter. I think this is a situation that's similar to where GE's management came out and said, oh, by the end of the year, we'll be profitable with cash flow positive and have free cash flow again. And they did it in about half the time frame. So Disney's total segment operating income was up 27% year over year to $3.9 billion. That beat consensus target by nearly 13% as well. So overall, two thumbs up from me, from Disney, with the kind of I want to say the what's the best word that I can use for this, Dave? See, this is why
Caveat.
the caveat that that ESPN deal, it needs to be better than what it's looking out to be. So
Gotcha. Yep.
all right, let's move into Pepsi earnings.
Pepsi. I prefer
What that
Coke,
means.
but go ahead.
Yeah. All right. So Pepsi, they reported a surprise drop in quarterly sales and forecast, a sharp slowdown in organic revenue growth. Multiple price hikes weighed on demand for its beverages and chips, and it sent the shares down about 4%. So not a huge drop there. But they said that demand had started to wane, mainly in the United States, and consumers are balking at higher prices for sodas and snacks. and this is after 2 years of Pepsi passing on higher production cost to consumers to keep its margins intact. They said that we are seeing, I said again, a slowdown in the United States. They said this is in part due to pricing and tightening household budgets.
So hold up. So Pepsi came out and said, hey, we have to pay people more and it costs more money to move stuff around. So to keep our profit margins the same, we're just going to go ahead and charge the customer more, which has been the narrative from the get-go of, you know, a lot of people on all the talking heads on CNBC and Bloomberg saying that, hey, they're not going to eat this inflation. They're right. just going to pass right. it on to the consumer.
Right.
And, you know, and they're going to keep their profits at the same level that they've always been because that's their goal of their business. So just shouldn't be expected that they're going to do that. But right now, with the consumer using credit cards to buy groceries, they can't afford it.
Yeah. And so now they're starting to feel the pinch on this. And this is why I'm starting to see we may actually see if other corporations report similar earnings to Pepsi, we may see deflation in the United States.
So, all right. So do you think this is a signal of possible deflation to come?
It's a possible signal. Yeah.
Okay.
Back in January, Carrefour, this is Europe's largest food retailer. They told everybody, hey, we're not going to even stock Pepsi co-brands. This is unacceptable. The price increases are unacceptable, so we're not going to stock them. Pepsi's fourth quarter revenue fell 0.5%. This is the first drop in 14 quarters, by the way. Analysts had expected a 1.4% rise.
Really?
Yep.
I mean, last quarter, I remember you and I had a back and forth discussion because Pepsi was saying that, you know, they see some headwinds regarding Wegovy and Ozempic and Eli Lilly's drug Mounjaro, and it might eat into their sales. And you're like, that's just ridiculous. This is never going to eat into Pepsi, you know. And, you know, here we are, and Pepsi's earnings are lower, and some analysts were actually expecting them to be higher. Even after last quarter, Pepsi said it's going to be lower. Like, do they not believe what Pepsi's saying?
I don't know that it was about Wegovy, though.
But it got brought up. It got brought up in the earnings call. It got brought up in the actual earnings call last quarter.
I don't think it did.
Didn't it? So it got brought up somewhere because you and I were going back and forth about it right here on this show.
Yeah, but it wasn't an earnings call. It was panic being led by CNBC.
Okay, so it was the talking heads. Got it.
Yeah, it was the talking heads. And I think this is, I mean, well, they wound up being right, but I think for the wrong reason. I think it's honestly, I think it's a macroeconomic thing. And that's what Pepsi is saying here, too. They did forecast annual growth, organic revenue growth of 4%, compared to 9.5% reported for last year. So that's going lower as well. The upside here is that the company is expecting fiscal 2024 earnings to be at $8.15. It's roughly flat, but a little bit above the expectations of $8.14. They said raw material costs will moderate from the level seen last year. That's good, and that's probably be one of the reasons why they're going to continue, you know, why they'll have growth in this fiscal year. They announced a 7% to its annual dividend. See, that's one thing I want to say, that like, if you have a so-and-so quarter or a quarter that's, you know, kind of, I guess, you know, you didn't beat at all. And it's not, I don't want to say depressing quarter because it's not that. It's not like an RH quarter from last year. It's a disappointing quarter. Maybe don't raise your dividend 7%.
This is what I just said. I'm repeating myself again, like from 5 minutes ago. It's deja vu. Yeah. Why is the company raising their dividend when they should be using that money to help grow sales this year? You know, yeah. I would rather of them use that money, whatever percentage that is, and take it off the cost of their product.
Yeah.
That way their sales, the total revenue would have gone higher.
Yeah. Fourth quarter, gross margin did expand by 97 basis points. So to me, that gives you room to lower that pricing back down to increase demand. So that's what I want Pepsi to do. I want lower prices. Eat the revenue, you know, a little bit in the short term to increase it in the long term. If you're having a 97 basis point increase in gross margin, you've got room to lower your prices now, especially if you see the cost of raw materials moderating this year.
Oh, yeah, the cost of raw materials, but I mean, yeah, I mean, it's somewhat going higher for Pepsi. I mean, they own Frito-Lay. It's a lot of corn chips, price of corn, but potato chips, potatoes, stuff like that. But I mean, it's not like it's Hershey's. Hershey saw a price increase of their commodity by over 200%, man.
Yeah.
I mean, the cost of a metric ton of Coca-Cola was what $2,000 per metric ton last year. Now it's almost $6,000 per metric ton. And it's because of half the fields in Africa, where most of the cocoa in the world is from, all are not growing or got burned.
Yeah.
So I mean Hershey's earnings was atrocious, not atrocious, but it was bad because of it, and they said headwinds. Pepsi, however, doesn't sell chocolate, and that I'm aware of. It's more of like chips, snacks, stuff like that. And you know, I don't see corn going that route right now. Corn seems to be pretty stable in price. Where's these increases? Is shipping?
Well, that's going to be part of it for sure.
Because oil's gone down from last year. From last year, it was at $100 a barrel. Now it's at 75.
Yeah.
So that's the plastic, making plastic bags of oil. It's gone down in price. Where's their base price coming from?
Yeah, well, I think it's honestly, it's probably currency.
They're okay.
But I mean, that's moderating as well too. So I mean, bring your
they should have bought Bitcoin.
If you can, Pepsi, bring your prices down, because your volume of sales, that's what's not hitting. The volume here is the problem. So bring the prices down, bring that volume back up, and we'll be in better shape, at least as long as there's not a recession.
Dude, if you could cut that dividend, I mean, what's that dividend to, what's that yield to an average investor? What, 1%?
Yeah, it's not. I mean, it's
if 1%, if but, you could actually just cut your prices and stay paying that dividend, your stock price will go up probably 5 to 6%. I would rather have that yield.
I agree.
Than the 1%.
And talking about 7% increase to the average investor like me, it's pennies. While as to the entirety of the company, it's probably, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, maybe even billions of dollars.
Right. Exactly. I mean, I don't know. We're just two guys here, Monday morning quarterback in this company. But, you know, that's our viewpoint, man. Yep.
I still own it. I still own it, and I own it for the long term. But it was,
I'm not buying it just because of that.
It was disappointing.
All right, man. What else you got?
But at least Disney was great. I don't want to say great. Good. Let's say good. Disney was good.
Disney was good, and I like where Bob Iger is. I'm always impressed with Bob Iger. I want to see what he brings about, because his changes. I mean, when you become CEO of a company, and you make changes from that high level up, it does take months to take effect on the bottom level and actually see the change in the actual operating expenses and revenue and everything else. This will be a year that Bob Iger has had been the CEO for the full year. So let's see how this year turns out.
87% decrease in losses in streaming. I think that's been him.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, they're still like barely a fraction of Netflix amount of subscribers. Netflix is the king. The king is streaming still with subscribers. I shared a chart in one of our group chats, Brandon, and it was like Netflix was number one on subscribers, and they were number one by like 300 million ahead of like second place. It was
but if you add in Hulu, that puts Disney closer, at least. If you add in Hulu and Disney Plus, put Disney Plus and Hulu together, because it's the same company. We're going to see Hulu become all, you know, owned completely by Disney soon. The subscriber base, you know, add that to Disney Plus, and it probably makes it look a little bit more favorable to Disney.
A lot of people have those bundles like I have. Yeah, basically, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there you go. All right, man. What you got?
That's it.
All right. Nice. Nice. Cool. My turn to take over. You ready, man? Let's start off with these quick. I told you I have a couple quick articles I want to get into before I get into ARM. ARM is something we're going to talk about here in a minute. But the first quick article I want to talk about, and I mentioned to you what it was about, but I'm going to read the headline for our listeners right now. The headline reads, Amazon's Prime Video to stream its first NFL playoff game next season. It's reported by the Wall Street Journal. Came out in the Reuters headlines at 6:26 p.m. yesterday. The article goes into they'll stream exclusively the first playoff game next season. The announcement comes ahead of the Super Bowl for streaming on Paramount Plus and broadcast live on CBS. Amazon did not immediately respond to the Reuters request for a comment, and the NFL declined the comment. And so it's taken a lot of heat, the NFL is, for having these streaming services stream these. You have to have this streaming service in order to get this game, but it's profitable for the NFL, right? So, I mean, is this going to be the future that we have to have all these different streaming services if we want to watch NFL? I think the NFL is going to end up losing listeners, and then the deal is going to turn out bad for companies like Amazon. But let's get into some of the numbers here.
Well, let me just say this real quick. This is why I'm expecting more consolidation in streaming services. That's why, Disney not only did just ESPN, but they're doing NBA on TNT and they're doing Fox Sports as well. I expect more of stuff like that to happen because I think people are getting tired of having 1,000 different things that they get charged for every month because of streaming.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I mean, I would cut out my Hulu Live probably if all the sports were on one streaming services, and then I could get my Bloomberg, CNBC, and all those other channels on another one.
Yeah.
Know what I mean? 30-second spot for Sunday's game on CBS sold for around $7 million for 30 seconds, according to this year. More than 50 advertisers will compete for the attention of 100 million plus viewers expected to tune in for the big game. So you think this consolidation is going to help with this,
Yeah, I
Brandon?
do. And look at I mean, I think people hate when I bring up WWE, but look at the WWE deal specific to Netflix, $5 billion, right? Think about how much money the NFL could make if they said, we're just going to solely license our product to one streaming service. How much money would that bring them? Instead of having it all spread out amongst Fox, NBC, CBS, blah, 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 there's a lot of hands in the pot there. If they said in 2026, we're going to go exclusively to Amazon, Amazon would probably pay them a lot of money for that.
Yeah, and then everybody would be having them buy Amazon Prime Video watch and to watch it Prime Live or whatever.
But at least it would only be one streaming service and you'd get all the games.
If you're an NFL fan, I wouldn't pay for it. I'm not that much of an NFL fan to pay for it,
That's
so
true.
I wouldn't care.
You wouldn't care. You wouldn't be able to watch a Super Bowl.
There's plenty of people's houses that have invited me over to go hang out if I wanted to watch this year's Super Bowl, but I am not interested.
Ooh, Mr. Popular. I'm just kidding.
I'm actually gonna watch it at home by myself. And I bake some of these wings I have marinating in my fridge. That's my big plans, is to relax and have a quiet evening by myself. So, but I don't know. I think it's a good thing in the short term for Amazon Prime. I think it's a good thing in the short term for NFL, but in the long term, I don't know, man. I see issues with it. So,
Yeah.
all right, we're gonna go into some updates again. I keep updating because there's new news that happens all the time with Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly. Novo Nordisk, of course, has their weight loss drug. And Eli Lilly has their weight loss drug. So let's talk about some of these things that are going on. I want to mention this headline here, Brandon, just so you know what I'm talking about. Weight loss drugs are still hard to find, but Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly are trying to change that. This was published today at 8 a.m. on CNBC.com, and the author was Annika Kim Constantino. All right. So in it's going to say last week, Novo Nordisk said it had more than doubled the supply of its lower dose versions of its weight loss injection with Gobi in January with previous months, which allows more people to start taking the drug. right? Because they were seeing shortages. So they said, well, how can we get people to start taking it? There was a limited availability at the 0.25, 0.51, and 1.7 milligram doses of Wegovy. So they went ahead and cut their drug and so they could sell more of the beginner version to get more people onto the drug. I find it funny because I could use that same sentence, Brandon, and be talking about a drug dealer of crack cocaine.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. But anyways, they plan to gradually increase the Wegovy supply the rest of the year. That's what they said in their fourth quarter earnings call last week, which was they blew it out of the water, right? I covered it. They beat expectations by a ton. They unveiled multi-billion-dollar deals that could increase the Wegovy supply, but just not yet. On Monday, they said they'll acquire drug manufacturer Catalent in a $16.5 billion deal. Catalent is the main supplier of fill finish work, which involves filling and packaging syringes, injection pens for Wegovy. Novo Nordisk will then buy three of Catalent's manufacturing sites from Novo Hordens for $11 billion. Novo Nordisk said that the purchase will gradually increase the company's manufacturing capacity starting in 2026. This is a lot quicker to do it this way versus trying to build manufacturing plants up from the ground up, which they're still planning on doing. But they're going to go ahead and just buy this as a quicker way to get going.
In some cases, it's cheaper to do it that way too. You know, if you've got a higher production cost on things like this, like if you make large equipment or if you have a factory that has to have large equipment, and drug companies actually do, then it's cheaper to buy these things rather than to organically, you know, do it yourself sometimes.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, the pot calling the kettle black here, Eli Lilly, CFO, said investors during the earnings call on Tuesday that the company had concerns about Novo Holdings acquisition, especially since Eli Lilly contracts Catalent to manufacture some of its medications. But Eli Lilly has said it doesn't have a meaningful production coming from Catalent, so the acquisition may have little effect on its business. You might be thinking, why is that the pot calling the kettle black? Well, that's because Eli Lilly's trying to say that, you know, hey, they're going to have a monopoly on the business that them and Novo Nordisk, which they actually have a duopoly on, which is the weight loss market. You have Pfizer over here standing on the sidelines wishing they could be part of this, but they can't. So, I mean, it's kind of funny that Eli Lilly's trying to say, hey, this is not fair. It's not fair. You guys own most of the market. So it is what it is, right?
Poor Pfizer.
Poor Pfizer. Come on, really? Poor Pfizer.
What I think every time I look at my portfolio right now.
Yeah, poor okay. Pfizer. I'll give you that. All right, so let's talk about some ARM, right? And I'm not talking about a piece of a body. I'm talking about ARM Holdings. Had an awesome rise in the stock. Now, was it worth it, Brandon? Was it worth it? So a lot of this came in from the company's royalty. The royalty revenues came in at $470 million for the quarter. That's just off royalties, which on patents and intellectual rights they own. That's a lot, man, for just royalties. And top line acceleration with the new V9, we estimate driving the C2024E smartphone/PC client to 38% year over year. The cloud compute revenues up 66% year over year. That's amazing growth. And that's all businesses they were already involved in that I had nothing to do with AI, man. And so that's what's really driving this up. Because of this huge drive up, and because SoftBank is a big investor of that, SoftBank was able to pay off a lot of debt because of the rise in the stock price. And that's what they said they were going to use some of this money for, the profit, if you will, because SoftBank bought it at $65 a share and is currently at $115. Good for Masayoshi Son to get one right every now and then. We've really covered his losses pretty much. So I'm very happy for him to actually knock one out of the park here. The royalty revenues grew 12% year over year. Growth in the four quarters accelerating 30% year over year, guided March So it continued, the royalties are where this is really happening. But I want to talk about something that happened, that article that came out before the ARMS earnings call and before the day of the ARMS earnings. So this was an article written on February 6, 2024. It was by Bazinga. And the headline read, "Unpacking the latest option trading trends in ARM holdings." Here's goes into the article. I'm going to read a little bit of this, Brandon. I want to get your thought, okay? So deep-pocketed investors have adopted a bullish approach towards ARM holdings, and something the market players shouldn't ignore. R tracking the public option records at Bazinga unveils the significant move today. So it just happened the day of this article. Unknown investors, they went ahead. The general mood of these heavyweight investors is divided, with 56% leaning bullish and 44% bearish. There are options and three puts totaling 188,000, but 22 are calls totaling $18 million in call options on ARM place a couple days before the earnings call. That's a lot of money put in options a couple days before. It tells me somebody knew something and word got out. And you know how the Wall Street is. You know, no one's going to say they're doing insider trading, but 18 million in options a couple days before.
Yeah, and add that to the fact that this is a highly speculative stock out of the gate. Not that the company itself is speculative. I'm not saying that, but what I'm saying is that the stock has been very popular to bet on amongst Wall Street bets types and such. So that I don't think that the individual retailer, the retail stock buyer is pushing that. I think that's institutional for sure.
Right. And some of the calls, Brandon, were as high as $82 per share on a call. That's completely out of the money, quote unquote, a term that's used in Wall Street. There's like a little zone when you're looking at options that people call in the money zone. Yeah. That's completely out of the money zone.
Well, in the money is basically like anything that is at or lower than the current share price. That means that your option is in the money. And that includes, I think, the fee that you're paying for the options to the, so if you're buying a spot price of $66, but, $4 fee on top of it, then $70 is what that would be. If it's one option contract, then you'd have to be $70 or less to be in the money.
Yeah. There you go. I love that explanation. This is the part where we try to educate a little bit of people about what's going on. But you could, anybody's able to, if you're willing to do the research, anybody, this information is out there for anyone to see, of option calls and or puts that are going on any one activity. But I want to highlight, there was this whole article here and it goes on and on and on, but it talks about how these bulls were just putting money in a few days ahead of time. And now I do preface by saying that these bulls aren't always right. Sometimes this happens and they get it wrong. There was famously one gentleman, I don't know if it was a gentleman, sorry, one person a couple years back that everybody kept acknowledging that here comes this individual again. Every month they would play the same call on a certain company, and for like 3 months straight it didn't pan out, and they were betting like millions every single time, and the payout was going to be like hundreds of millions if they got it right, and they lost 3 months in a row, and then finally the fourth month they've hit. And so some people are just gambling and hoping for that to happen.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful of that as well. But Brandon, Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly, any thoughts on their supply issues or the demands or what they're doing? Do you think that's kind of unethical of Novo Nordisk to go ahead and cut their supply down and make it easier for beginners to get in when they don't have the supply per se right now, for once they've already been in 6 months and they need that higher up milligram?
I don't think so. It's their decision to do it. It's their product. And if consumers don't like it, then there'll be opportunities for generics and things like that in the future.
In the future, but not right now.
And competition too.
Right. Yeah.
And it's not necessarily something, this isn't, like this isn't like insulin for diabetes or anything like that. It's a different category of drugs.
You know what the funny thing is, Brandon, is like I talk a lot about Novo Nordisk and Wegovy, and I mention it sometimes in our group text messages. And all over my Facebook account, it's just ads for Siglimitude and Wegovy and all these shots. Just constantly I see it. So, yeah, there is a lot of demand in the United States for it. I still believe in the stock. It's now up over 20% for me since I bought it in November. I'm doing excellent. I see it still having a high potential to hit over $200 a share by the end of the year.
Nice.
So I'm looking very happy on that one. Brandon, final thoughts? Final thoughts? Anything you want to leave us with?
No, I don't. I'm still not sold on the soft landing. I'm just not sold on it. I don't. Look at China right now. Look what's going on in China that could spread easily over here to the United States. Or it could, you know, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. Let me say this. I don't know what's going to happen, but I have my thoughts on it. I've got my opinions on to where as to where we're going. I'm about still 60-40, no soft landing.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I will say this. I was within Brandon's camp here, hard, no soft landing for a while. And I thought this is just simple math. Economy's got to go into recession to recover from this high of inflation. At the time I was making those comments, inflation was at its near its peak and just starting to come down. I've changed my mind on that. And I'm very, you know, I see more of a soft landing hope here that we can actually get out of this without any kind of hard landing or deflation. But we'll time will see. We're not prophets here. We're not perfect either.
No, not at all. And it's been kind of odd if you look at the past like 15 years, China versus us, inflation and deflation have gone opposite.
They have gone opposite. Yes, yeah, yes.
But we were experiencing a long deflationary period for about 10 years and. It actually wound up being a really good thing for the United States, you know, from 2010 to 2019. And China was experiencing inflation and now it's deflation and we're inflation. That's
right. I will say this. I'm going to have two topics to cover for my final thought. First thing is ARM Holdings and is it overvalued or not? I made the wrong call on NVIDIA last year. I said it was overvalued when it skyrocketed way up to like 450. Now it's at 720. Boy, was I wrong. And now NVIDIA is actually, I don't know if you guys read headlines, but if you do, please read this headline about NVIDIA making, trying to dive into the $30 billion market of custom made chips. They're going to use Taiwan Semiconductor as the maker, but they're going to design them by NVIDIA and they want to take that away from Broadcom, who sees $10 billion a year from that market. They're trying to compete in there and take that and just have total control of the semiconductors. So having said that, I don't want to say ARM is overvalued at this point. I got it wrong with NVIDIA. I'm very cautious now and throwing that around, but it did gap up a lot. So just be careful. Do your research. If you believe in the company still, then you know, go ahead. That's your choice, but make sure you've done your research and you firmly believe in the fundamentals there. The second piece, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's a hype stock. It's very hard to guess what a hype stock is going to do and where the market is going to value it because it oftentimes goes way overvalued, but it can keep going. It can just keep going. And I learned this from Tesla 10 years ago and then 5 years ago and then probably about 3 years ago again, over and over and over again. So
it's funny you say that because Tesla is my next point. there's always a point that Tesla hits where it's like, don't ever bet against Musk. But last week when I covered like what was actually behind the recall and everything, since then Tesla has been up all week long, has been going up steadily. Now is back up to, I believe, what, 195? Mm-hmm. On its way back up to get about 200 again. Will it go all the way back up to 250? Maybe, maybe not. But when it was down there below one, around 180 was an opportunity to buy at a lower cost in DCA if you were already in Tesla like I was. And I did that as an opportunity because I believed in it. I didn't believe in the validity of the recall causing such a drastic drop in it. So I'm hoping for Tesla to go ahead and continue its move higher. That's one I'm definitely looking at as a positive. It's still got more room to go back up. Will it hit 250? I don't know, but it's going to be higher from where it's at right now for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I think so.
All right, everybody. We hope you've enjoyed the show. If you enjoyed it, please hit the subscribe button or tell your friends and family about us. Spread the word again. Like, we appreciate it. As always, we hope we have been entertaining, educational, and uplifting because we want everyone to make money. Have a good night.
Have a good night.